Welcome to the Friday, May 15th, 2020 meeting of the Arizona Game and Fish Commission. And Mr. Director, I think we're going to open with the pledge and then introductions.
Okay, I will I'll lead us in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the Republic,
which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Director. Members of the commission, why don't we have each of you introduce yourself, starting with farthest south in Elgin.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Bill Brake, a rancher on the Cochise, Santa Cruz County border in Elgin, Arizona.
Let's go to Gila County next.
Good morning. James Guggenauer, Payson, Arizona.
And let's go to Yavapai County next.
Good morning. Todd Geiler, Yavapai County.
And this is Kurt Davis in Maricopa County, and I'm going to just do a double check, Mr. Director, to see if Chairman Sparks is on.
Chairman Sparks.
Okay, I'm turning the meeting back over to Chairman Sparks. Introduce yourself, sir.
Greg Sparks from Tucson, Arizona. As everyone knows, we start our meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance, unless someone has something prior to that. I assume Kent Theridou.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we already did the Pledge of Allegiance.
Good. And then we have a...
we have introduction of staff, Mr. Chairman, by Ty, and then you'll be able to rock and roll.
I have a Governor Ducey ordered flags type thing to be read also, so...
Mr. Chairman, why don't you start with the flags, half-staff order and moment of silence.
Governor Ducey orders flags at half-staff for National Peace Officers Memorial Day. He ordered all flags in all state buildings be lowered to half-staff from sunrise to sunset Friday, May 15th, in recognition of Peace Officers Memorial Day. Arizona, I'm reading, Arizona peace officers put their lives on the line to serve others and protect our communities, and some give their all care to carry out their duties, said Governor Ducey. Today it's about them. Their names and sacrifice will never be forgotten. Arizona is forever grateful to all those heroes and their families, the service of forgiving all to keep others safe. As a side note, yesterday from Davis Mountain Air Force, we had three 310s and two F-16s fly in unison over the Marana, Tucson, and Oro Valley hospitals to salute the hospital workers in these times of need. So with that, that concludes the opening.
Mr. Chairman, I will introduce the agenda and we'll get going here. I think all five commissioners are on, so I won't do a roll call because everybody introduced themselves. Before I get to that, there's several staff in the room. Deputy Tom Finley is around someplace. I'm looking at the screen. I think we have Assistant Directors DeVos, Giles, Cummings, and McMullen all on the line. General Counsel Jim Odenkirk is also in attendance, and there's four people here in the office that are presenters coming up. So, Mr. Chairman, Commission, we'll be operating off in a meeting agenda revision number one, dated May 13th, 2020. Today's a little bit different. For those members of the public wishing to view and listen to the meeting, they may call. Maybe call into 602-666-0783 with access code 280-046-234#. That is listed on the website. That's for those who want to listen on the phone. Members of the public wanted to speak to the commission on a specific agenda item can call 602-962-8790 and follow the prompts to say your name, where you're calling from, any agenda item you wish to speak about. And once we get to that item, we will... but we'll get to you. That's also on the website on the agenda. Copies of any presentations, documents that are being discussed are also available on our website. Members of the commission are not here at the office. They are all calling in via web link. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I believe we can get to item number one, which is our consent agenda. Under the consent agenda, we have A, which is approved utility permit agreement with Arizona Public Service Company. Presenters Tyler Williford, Region 4 Habitat Specialist. Does the commission wish to pull that item from the consent agenda?
No.
Oh.
So I'll make a motion, Mr. Chairman, to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
On favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0, I believe.
All right, Mr. Chairman, that moves us to item 2A, which is an approval of a interagency service agreement with the Arizona State Parks Board to fund boater use survey. Our presenter is Gene Elms, law enforcement branch chief.
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
You bet.
Okay, this is an interagency service agreement between the Arizona State Parks Board and the department, which is necessary to clarify responsibilities and fundings for the triennial boater use survey. During the 2013 legislative session, House Bill 2172 modifies statute eliminating the 30-year requirement for ADOT to conduct the gas tax survey. Arizona State Parks and the department conducted the triennial survey. In this agreement, there was also some other legislative changes related to our watercraft funds during that time. And it was an agreement between the directors that State Parks, in conjunction with the changes that were going on, would accept responsibility for the survey. The first time the survey was conducted is in 2015. This will be the second time that State Parks has agreed to do the survey. The language in the survey is identical to the language that was approved by the commission for the 2015 survey. There is a little information in the commission memo related to the survey. Do you have any questions for me?
I have none.
I have none.
None from Guiler.
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, if there are...
Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Would this be appropriate time to recommend that we okay this memorandum?
Mr. Chair, I have a recommendation if the commission would like.
Please proceed.
The department recommends that the commission vote to approve the interstate interagency service agreement between the department and Arizona State Parks Board.
In favor?
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to accept the recommendation for the ISA, sure, Arizona State Parks Board.
Is there a second?
Second.
Anyone opposed? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. 5-0. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, Gene. Mr. Chairman, item number three is request to approve proposed rulemaking amending Article 2 rules addressing licenses, permits, stamps, and tags. Presenter is David Fernandez, legislative specialist.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. All right, there's the presentation. Thanks, Ben. Yep, this is David Fernandez. I'll be doing the presentation for the draft proposed rulemaking. If I could get the next slide, please. This is our Article 2 team. Ada's team lead asked me to give the presentation. I was happy to do so for him. Next slide, please. I'm just going to go through a brief overview of all of the different rules that we've proposed amendments for in this Article 2 rulemaking. I'm just going to go through in numerical order, list off the changes really quickly, and I have a slide prepared for questions ahead. But if there are any, I'm willing to take them as we go as well. So starting out, the first rule numerically is 201, the Pioneer's License. We have examined this one, and there's several rules where we've made the same recommendation, but the department had a requirement that an applicant's signature be notarized or witnessed in order to verify it. And over time, we've just developed better means of verifying a person's signature, and this has amounted to just something of a regulatory burden and a bit of trouble for folks who are applying for this license. So we're proposing to remove that requirement from this rule and from a couple of others that you'll see coming up. Additionally, we are going to be accepting copies of a valid government ID instead of requiring that they be presented in person, and that's for the same reason.
David, let me interrupt you for a second. I've just been informed we're having some technical difficulties with the webcast right now. Can you hold on a sec to see if we can make sure that this can be viewed?
Not a problem.
Mr. Chairman, what's going on is the people can hear us on the phone, but apparently it's not hitting our website, so Ben is resetting a couple things. And once it's going, I'll let you know. It should not be long.
That's fine. Thank you.
Is Doug on?
Yes, I'm here.
Do you think we might have to have everyone sign off and then sign back in?
I don't think so right now.
Okay.
It's a separate issue from the chat here, Commissioner.
Okay. Thank you.
and a monitor here. We are on.
We are.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I think we are back up and running. Sorry about that. David, proceed.
All right, thank you. All right, Mr. Chairman, just picking back up on the Pioneer license, since I'm not sure where that cut off. We are eliminating the requirement that the signature be notarized or witnessed in order to verify it, and are going to be accepting copies of government ID as opposed to the actual identification itself, in order to enable applicants to access this a little bit easier. A clarification on the Pioneer license. This is the way that it works, but we will be explicitly stating that the Pioneer license remains valid if the holder moves out of state. Next slide, please. The guide license is where probably the majority of changes for Article 2 are going to be taking place. We've improved this rule in a few different ways. So the current wording of the rule essentially requires a manual on-paper examination for the guide license. So we can't provide this anyway except physically on paper with pen and ink. We're going to be requesting an update to that that will allow for an electronic examination, so it can be administered by computer, perhaps completely paperlessly. But we will still be requiring that that examination be given at a Game and Fish office, where we will be verifying identification. In addition, under the current rule, the guide license can be renewed without any sort of review. It's just a paperwork. And since the license examination is almost entirely regarding Arizona law and the current rules regarding hunting and fishing, we are suggesting a five-year continuing education requirement. So essentially at 5 years, a guide would have to demonstrate knowledge of the current Arizona law as opposed to the law and rules that were in place at the time the license was first issued, and especially given how quickly those things are changing. And again, as you saw in the Pioneer license, we're allowing for submission of copies of IDs in this case. Next slide. Got a little bit of housekeeping that we're doing between the lifetime license and the benefactor license. Again, these licenses are special licenses similar in nature to the Pioneer in that they stay with the person who owns them. We are essentially going to be blending the two of these rules because these two are so similar. The only difference between the benefactor and lifetime largely being that the benefactor is something of a gift. And we're also clarifying that because these are licenses, they do not include any of the permit tags, stamps, or any other requirements that are placed for take of wildlife. And again, this is a clarification, so this is how the licenses work now, but we are going to get explicit about stating it. Next slide. This one's just a quick clarification on our 213 hunt permit tags and non-permit tags. We're just going to be clarifying what the duplicate, what the requirements are to receive a duplicate license. Next slide. On the crossbow permit, there was a bit of overlap between the crossbow permit and the champ permit. So we are recommending a couple of improvements to the rule to clarify the roles between the two different licenses. Essentially, on this one, we want to establish that a temporary crossbow permit is valid for a period of 1 year. This is to establish consistency with everything else. Under the current rule, the way that it's written, the permit is valid for sort of an indistinguishable period of time, depending on a medical professional's opinion of how long an injury is going to persist. It's just creating a little bit of havoc, and at this stage, we feel it would be better to just have a definitive timeline, and if a person needs to renew and examine whether this permit is still appropriate for them, would welcome the opportunity to do that. We are also requesting an option for cost recovery. Currently, there is no fee for this permit, and there is an administrative cost associated with issuing it. So we will be requesting that and then exploring what the minimum recovery cost would be. And further clarification to something that's a little bit confusing in this rule is the functional draw test being used as a method of determining eligibility. In the wording of the current rule, it could be interpreted that that's all that's required, and we want to be explicit about the requirement that there has to be an injury or disability associated with that failure on the draw test in order to qualify for the permit. Next slide. And this is, again, the overlap with the CHAMP permit. We're not requesting any changes to the CHAMP permit itself because this is what would essentially be in place for somebody who has a permanent as opposed to a temporary disability. But we are requesting that same language to be able to assess an administrative fee because there are costs associated with the issuance. Next slide. So those are all the changes to the rule. Just as a quick check-in at where we are, this is the proposed draft rulemaking that is being put to you for review. We'll be filing that with the Secretary of State, provided that it's approved by the Commission today, where we'll proceed into a public comment period and then further into final rulemaking before the end of the year. Both of these stages, again, we'll be receiving public comments. We'll have opportunity to further refine the recommendations to changes to the rule. And next slide is for questions. So if there are any questions that the chairman or commissioners have on any of these changes, I'm happy to address those now.
Mr. Chairman, I have none.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Jim Duginar here. David, thanks for the information. One comment that I saw in there was that adding to the exam some comments about fair chase, hunter ethics, and conservation. I think that's a great improvement. Maybe you could say a few words about that.
Certainly. Well, again, these are big issues that are going on right now. And when it comes to fair chase and ethics and conservation, these are rules that there are rules coming out of the commission pertaining to these concepts. And with the guide license being an examination of what the current rules are and what the current state of the law is, having a bit of that background, I think would be very beneficial to guides. Not just so that they can say that they know what the law is, but essentially why that law is and what the underlying driver of those things is going to be, so that there's a more complete understanding of the state.
Mr. Chairman, this is Kurt. Let me add to that, Commissioner Guggenhauer. The rules subcommittee of the board, which is and this right now is Commissioner Guiler and myself, we met extensively with this committee. I think we had two different Zoom meetings and then some follow-up back and forth. And this was something that both the commissioners on that subcommittee felt strongly about to make sure that was incorporated into this process, because again, as David mentioned to earlier, one is rules change, laws change, devices change. And then the second piece of that is that, as you know, the commission has addressed a lot of fair chase and ethics issues over the past years. So we wanted to ensure that that was part of in essence, a continuing education that would occur for people who obviously represent sportsmen in a different way, which is our guides. And it's very important for them to be on top of these kinds of changes and processes. So that's where a lot of this conversation came from. And with that, I'll just add at this point, so I don't have to break in again, the commissioner subcommittee on guidelines and rules highly recommends approving this recommendation.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. That was my point. I think that this is a good improvement, and I'm happy to see those in the current regulations.
And I want to thank Commissioner Guiler because this rule has some complications in it, and it was his first rule package review, and he was awesome in that process and caught a couple things and brought up some things that I think were important to improving this initial draft. As David's lined out, it will obviously now go through the full public process for comment, and we'll come back to the commission again later on in the process.
Ben, do we have any? Ben, do we have anybody? Any public wanting to comment on this? Okay, we do not.
Okay, if we don't have any further comments and there are no other questions, then I'll just advance to the next slide, which is the recommendation. And the department recommends that the commission vote to approve the new notice of rulemaking, docket opening, notice of proposed rulemaking, and economic impact statement amending rules within Article 2, licenses, permits, stamps, tax.
Anyone opposed to the motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the presentation or the recommendation as presented.
I second that, Guiler.
And all in favor, please signify by
aye.
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 Any opposed? Carries 5-0. Thank you.
One thing to follow up, Mr. Chairman, and for David and Ty. This goes to, on the tags part, I just want to make sure, and Commissioner and our counsel, Jim Odenkirk, may want to look at it. I want to make sure if this is the place, and it may not be, but if we need to consider any potential, we may not, but language tweaks related to the tag definitions, because I want to ensure that we have the flexibility to go to an alternative tag process than our current stick back tags. And that's a whole nother conversation, but I just want to make sure that the commission would have the flexibility to go to a different tag system if it chooses to, so that the rule does not impede that.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Davis, just to clarify, you're referring to the actual physical format of the tags, the sticky back?
Yes.
Okay.
And this may not affect that. I just want to make sure that if it does, because we're going to have a conversation, I'm sure, in the not too distant future about tags and the and alternatives we may have that are more cost effective.
I've captured that. Okay.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, I think we're good there. We'll move on to item four. Item four is a shooting range development grant request for FY 2021. Presenter is Matthew Schwarzkopf, statewide shooting range administrator.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. I'm here to present on the shooting range development grants. There it is. A little bit of background on the program. It was actually developed in 1996 by the commission in order to encourage and the development and improvement of shooting ranges. Quick note on this funding. The commission provides the grants fund annually as authorized by the legislator. Granting or denying funds is at the discretion of the commission. So that's a little bit of background on the funding on that. All right. The organizations that are eligible for this grant are sportsmen's clubs and organizations, as well as government agencies. Quick note on that, privately owned and for-profit ranges are not eligible for this program. Some grant requirements. The first requirement of a grantee is they must provide a minimum of 50% match. That match can be cash, donated labor, materials, and land, or any or other monies or donations. The projects must be maintained for public use for at least 10 years. Acceptance of the grants does require that the range be made available to the department activities. Such activities include hunter education, the archery and shooting sports education programs, hunter recruitment efforts, and the Scholastic Clay Target Program. For fiscal year 2021, we do have $100,000 available in grant monies. Applicants can elect to receive partial funding. This year, the department received 5 grant applications, requesting a total of $137,685. Oops, sorry. The applications were reviewed by a panel of 5 department employees, and the department will be asking the commission to vote to approve all 5 of the applications. The first grant application is for the town of Oro Valley. They are requesting $50,000 for the construction of a permanent restroom facility at the Narahana Archery Range. The department will be recommending funding the total amount. The Pima Pistol Club in Tucson requested $13,785 for the installation of HESCO barriers as lateral berms on their Range 5. The department will be recommending funding the total amount. The Tri-State Shooting Park in Bullhead City has requested $19,000 to construct an awning on their new 50-yard shooting range. The department will be recommending funding the total amount. The White Mountain Clay Targets Club in Sholo is requesting $7,500 for road access improvements. And again, the department will be recommending the funding the total amount. And lastly, the town of Chino Valley in Prescott has requested $47,400 for the completion of their 200-yard rifle bay. The department will be recommending funding the remaining amount of the $100,000, which is $9,715. I do have a recommendation, but before I give that recommendation, is there any questions?
Mr. Chairman, Matt, this is Jim Guggenheim. I just wanted to say thanks for the call and the update yesterday. I got your email today, so I appreciate the hard work that goes into evaluating these projects and getting the funding out there. So thanks again.
This is Eric Sparks also. I do want to thank you, Mr. Schwarzkopf. I'm familiar with the Oro Valley facility, the archery range. It has become an excellent facility and is widely used. Tucson Pistol Club is nothing new. It's been one that's slowly developed and got better and better as time has gone on. So those are 2 excellent choices. So I recommend and comment on you on your condo.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Guggenheim and Sparks, thank you very much. All right. With that,
Chairman Sparks, the one thing that I would point out with Mr. Schwarzkopf's presentation is the barriers that they're putting in down there at the Pima Pistol Club, being a competitive pistol shooter and having shot at that range in the past. This is an improvement that I think the department and Mr. Schwarzkopf get a little gold star for the foresight of keeping that open and keeping safety first and foremost for those around the range, but more importantly with the encroachment of people moving into areas like what we have there in Oro Valley and in the greater Tucson area. This is something that the department can look at in a manner that deserves an attaboy for foresight and safety and keeping that range in a position where there won't be any questions from the general public in the future. So, Mr. Schwarzkopf, thank you for the phone call. Thank you for the candid conversation. And I appreciate all of the time you've put into this. I also would like to say that the White Mountain Clay Targets Club, having looked at that road and have a fellow that I've talked to, Matt, since you and I had our conversation, that $7,500 up there is going to go a long way. So thank you for your hard work.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Guiler, thank you. All right, with that, I do the recommendation. The department recommends that the commission vote to approve the shooting range grant applications for fiscal year 21 grant cycle as presented for the total of $100,000.
You have a second?
I move that we approve the recommendation as presented.
I'll second the motion.
Anyone opposed? All in favor, signify by aye.
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 Aye. 5-0, and Mr. Schwarzkopf, your grandfather would be proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Matt. Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, agenda items 5 and 6 are first read items. Commission may choose to take action on first read items as needed or may direct the department to place first read items on the consent agenda for approval at the next commission meeting. Item 5 is a license agreement with Yavapai County Flood Control District at Horseshoe Ranch, Yavapai County, Arizona. Our presenter is Jade Dickens, Water Resource Manager.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. As you
are you on? Are you on? Turn your thing on. Yeah.
Oh, there it is. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. thank you, Mr. Director. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, everyone else. Okay. Next slide. Oh, can I push it? Yes. Perfect. Okay, today I am here to present on a license agreement at our Horseshoe Ranch property. The department is proposing a 20-year license agreement for the purpose of providing access to Yavapai County Flood Control District to access an existing stream gauge and weather station that is right on the Agua Fria River at our Horseshoe Ranch property. There is a current right of entry in place. Well, it just expired, but it's currently was in place, and we, the Yavapai County Flood Control District and the department, wanted to enter into a longer-term agreement, so we felt like a license agreement was a better route to take than continuing to renew right of entries every 1 to 2 years. So the Flood Control District has installed and has done a good job of maintaining the gauges on the property as part of their larger alert system, is what they call it. And this agreement is really a public safety. It helps warn people downstream. It helps Yavapai County plan for floods, and it's a good partnership for us to have. So here is a map, I don't know how well you can see it, but of the location of the stream gauge, which is obviously right on the stream, and then the rain gauge and weather station is just up towards the house a little bit closer. So that's just kind of to give you an idea, very low impact on our property. And then I wanted to give you all a screenshot of what the alert system looks like so you can see what people see when they go to this website. The link to the website is there as well. So they have some pictures of different flows of at the stream gauge and then some information. And then I wanted to show what it looks like when there's actually flow. So I took a screenshot from March 13th when they had over 1,200 cubic feet per second flowing in the Agua Fria River. So that's just kind of a good example of how people that live downstream or in the area can go see what's going on at the Agua Fria River. So that's really the meat of my presentation. So I'll take any questions.
Anybody have any questions for her?
Okay.
Why don't you proceed with your recommendation?
Okay, I actually have two recommendations. So this is a first read, so typically we have it to go, the recommendation to go on the consent agenda, but because this has the right of entry has expired and the infrastructure is in place and we've got the established partnership with Yavapai County Flood Control District, I'm actually going to request that the commission take action if you guys approve.
Go ahead.
Okay. So the recommendation is that the department recommends that the commission approve entering into a license agreement with Yavapai County Flood Control District at Horseshoe Ranch and authorize the director as secretary to the commission to execute the necessary documents as recommended or approved by the Office of the Attorney General.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to approve the recommendation.
I'll second.
All in favor, signify by aye, please.
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries 5-0. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jade. Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, now the item you've all been waiting for. Item 6 is our FY 2022 proposed budget and FY 2021 modification. Presenters Tom Finley, Deputy Director. I'd like to start a little bit just by providing an introduction to this, and that this is the typical time of year where we bring the annual budget proposal to you, including the next year's proposed modifications. This budget was developed before the current COVID-19 situation happened. So there's some questions of what it will actually look like as we move forward. This is a process issue. We have to go through this. The commission will be presented the budget at the June meeting if there's any alterations for final approval. But I just want to make sure the commission understands that if there are revenue changes as we get into next year, we will obviously have to make changes on the fly, which is really not dissimilar than what we do every year, because we're always projecting what revenues will be. But we'll be reviewing our revenues on a monthly basis, and really this is probably a 3 to 6 month budget plan that we'll have to adjust, or we may have to adjust accordingly. I just want to make sure you know we will be coming back to you if any of those adjustments are necessary once we get into the new fiscal year.
Thank you, Director Gray. Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, just to add on to that a little bit, obviously the department will not spend funds that it doesn't have, and will regularly evaluate each department fund and make appropriate adjustments as needed for the foreseeable future. The divisions are evaluating and prioritizing expenditures, and we have formed a budget continuity team to look at each fund on a regular cadence and to bring alternatives and recommendations to E-Staff on budget issues as they become known. That team actually came to E-Staff yesterday and reviewed a fund that we were concerned about, and can't say enough about the work that they're doing. So thanks to the folks on that team. The objectives we're going to cover today will be to review the commission priorities for budget preparation, discuss department fund sources and flexibility allowed by each, discuss the opportunities and challenges within the funding sources, and review the department recommendations for the amended FY 2020 budget and proposed FY 2021 budget. We'll look at the commission priorities. The priorities were updated and revised last year. There is some crossover between several of the priorities, as many of the budget requests may impact multiple commission priorities. Employees submitting budget requests must designate a commission priority designation. This slide shows the total of all FY21 amendments and FY22 proposals by commission priority, which totals approximately $12.4 million. The department has several appropriated, non-appropriated, and federal funds that in some cases may serve as a common purpose. This slide identifies examples of the various funds. Appropriated funds include game and fish, watercraft licensing, the game, non-game, fish, and endangered species fund, capital improvement, conservation development, and the wildlife endowment fund. Non-appropriated examples include the off-highway vehicle recreation fund, heritage, wildlife conservation, and the indirect cost recovery fund. Federal fund sources include the Sport Fish and Wildlife Restoration Grants, Coast Guard, and State Wildlife Grants. The Game and Fish Fund provides funding for the general operation of the department and to meet match requirements for Fish and Wildlife Restoration federal grants. The largest proposed amendment for FY21 is PSERE base adjustments at $1.06 million. These types of adjustments relate to the governor's budget items for employee expenses and include approximately $861,000 for retirement adjustments and $207,000 for the health insurance trust fund. You'll see these adjustments consistently throughout this presentation. Also of note is the $100,000 for 10 in 10 business planning, which will assist in the department in providing a base budget for the planning and implementation of new revenue generation projects. For FY2022, the department is proposing $450,000 in PSPRS retirement system contribution payments, $1.2 million to fund the operating budget of the marketing branch, and $1 million toward a total proposal of $1.5 million for the continued implementation of the Conserve and Protect campaign. There is also a capital budget request for just over $1.2 million for facility operations and maintenance and building renewal, which are costs associated with operating our buildings. Due to the statewide COVID-19 response, Arizona legislature passed what's been referred to as a skinny budget before temporarily adjourning to comply with stay-at-home orders. The skinny budget did not include the last year's budget $3 million Game and Fish Fund capital request for hatcheries or the $450,000 dam and property maintenance from the Capital Improvement Fund, which will be presented in a future slide. There is still the possibility that the legislature will return and revisit supplemental budget legislation that was in process before the adjournment. In the event that any supplemental budget appropriation does not include the previous FY21 requests, the department is proposing a $2.6 million hatchery maintenance line item request for FY22 in the Game and Fish Fund and proposes the remaining $400,000 to be approved out of the Capital Improvement Fund. The purpose of the Watercraft Licensing Fund is to administer and enforce registration of watercraft and boating safety laws. Revenues consist of watercraft registration fees, license taxes, and penalty assessments. The department is proposing just under $464,000 in FY21 amendments that include PSERE base adjustments, recreational boating safety equipment support, and patrols in Regions 2 and 6. And patrol boats in Regions 2 and 6. In FY22, the department is proposing $500,000 for a PSPRS retirement contribution payment, $350,000 for aquatic invasive species work, and requests for additional patrol boats and RBS equipment support. The Game, Non-Game Fish, and Endangered Species Fund revenues are generated from the Arizona Income Tax Non-Game Checkoff. There are two proposed amendments for FY21, which include $1,200 in PSERE adjustments and $145,000 for statewide Arizona toad surveys. The department does not have any proposals for FY22. Conservation Development Fund revenue is generated by the $3 license surcharge. Money moves from the CDF to the Capital Improvement Fund. There are no amendments proposed for FY21. The FY22 proposal includes $850,000, which consists of $150,000 for dams, $300,000 for property maintenance, and $400,000 for hatchery maintenance, as mentioned in the previous Game and Fish slide. The Wildlife Endowment Fund is funded through the sale of lifetime hunting and fishing licenses. The current appropriation allows for the transfer of interest to the Game and Fish Fund. The department does not have any proposals for FY22. The Off-Highway Vehicle Recreation Fund is used to plan, administer, and enforce off-highway vehicle recreation and to develop facilities consistent with the off-highway vehicle plan. The FY21 department proposal includes $61,000 in PSERE adjustments and $31,000 to replace law enforcement tasers. For FY22, the department proposes $50,000 for PSPRS retirement system payouts, $10,000 for vehicle replacement cost, and $98,000 in additional taser replacements. The last $30,000 proposal, which is part of a total request for $150,000, is for the development of an education building and access road design. Heritage funds are used to protect areas containing sensitive or endangered biological features and wildlife. For FY21, the department proposes approximately $240,000, which includes $100,000 for the Landowner Relations Program and $64,000 on monitoring plots for the Sonoran Desert Tortoise. Some of the FY22 proposals include $478,000 for Page Springs property enhancements, $280,000 for Phase 2 of the EC Bar Wildlife Area fence reconstruction, and $241,000 for the Little Colorado River Bank Stabilization Project at the Becker Wildlife Area. There is also a total proposed of $200,000 for the newly acquired Cold Springs Ranch property that consists of a $50,000 base property request. Request for property maintenance and a $150,000 one-time request for the engineering design of a broodstock facility that will enhance the preservation of native fish species such as Gila and Apache trout. Continuing the Heritage Fund request for FY22, the department proposes several one-time enhancements that include projects for Mexican wolf recovery, Miller Canyon leopard frogs, Chiricahua leopard frogs, bullfrog eradication and occupancy assessments, and tortoise sterilizations. The Wildlife Conservation Fund is used to conserve, enhance, and restore Arizona's diverse wildlife resources and habitats and may include the acquisition of real property. Revenues are received from tribal gaming in accordance with Arizona revised statutes. The department proposal for the Wildlife Conservation Fund includes an FY21 amendment of $12,000 for PSERE adjustments. And in FY22, the proposal includes $1.2 million for fleet procurement. The Indirect Cost Recovery Fund consists of revenue that is recovered from other funds to pay central administrative costs such as HR, finance, and IT. The department proposes $61,000 in FY21, which includes $40,000 for a consolidated printer maintenance cost and $2,000 for vehicle replacement cost in FY22. The next few slides include the proposed expenditures of the department's federal assistance funds and wildlife contracts, grants, and agreements. First is Pittman-Robertson, commonly referred to as PR, which provides federal grant funds to the state of Arizona for wildlife restoration. For some background, PR funding is derived from an excise tax on a variety of hunting and shooting equipment. Decreased sales of these items in the prior year have resulted in reduced PR apportionment revenues. The department has taken significant steps to trim the existing FY21 spending plans and reprioritize the FY22 budget proposals. This is an example of the department's agility to maintain physical stability and remain financially agile while navigating an uncertain financial landscape. Depending on next year's apportionment, it may be possible to restore some of the deferred and reprioritized projects over the next few fiscal years, pending the Commission's approval. Moving forward, the department's proposed amendments for FY21 consist of $320,000 in PSERE adjustments, as well as several other projects, including Landowner Relations Program Partner Biologists for Region 4 and funding for survey implementation on cactus ferruginous pygmy owl nesting, big game and non-game birds and mammals. For FY22, the department proposes $700,000 for wildlife habitat enhancement initiative projects that would restore or improve 480,000 acres of critical habitat for wildlife. The department is also proposing $250,000 to fund year four of an elk predation research project and just over $171,000 for bobcat and mountain lion survival studies. These are the last of the FY22 proposals. The total proposed Pittman-Robertson Wildlife Restoration budget for FY22 is $18,351,000. Pittman-Robertson sections 4 and 10 are used to provide instruction in firearm operations and safety, wildlife management, nature conservation, ethics, gun laws, outdoor survival, and wilderness first aid. Funds may also be used for the development and operation of archery and shooting range facilities. There are no amendments proposed for FY21. The department FY22 proposal includes $500,000 to assist in funding the Conserve and Protect campaign, which is a comprehensive statewide campaign that raises awareness of the department, its conservation efforts and mission. Also included is $250,000 to fund the third phase of the Water and Wastewater Services Plan at the Ben Avery Shooting Facility and $110,000 for improvements to the rifle silhouette range. PR program income is revenue earned as a direct result of activities funded under the PR Section 4 grant. The FY22 proposal is to expend $3.13 million in estimated program income in support of Ben Avery Shooting Facility Main Range and Clay Target Center operations. The Dingle Johnson Sport Fish Restoration Program was created to restore and better manage America's declining fisheries resources. The FY22 proposed amendments include boat motor replacements for Regions 2 and 3. For FY22, proposals include $150,000 for the purchase of cutthroat trout and triploid eggs, as well as $70,000 for the replacement of the Region 4 electrofishing boat. The State Wildlife Grant Program provides federal grant funds to state fish and wildlife agencies for developing and implementing programs that benefit sensitive wildlife and their habitats, including species that are not hunted or fished. The department is proposing $100,000 as an amendment in FY21 and $50,000 in FY22 for the development of a web-based viewer that would serve internal and external customers in viewing spatial data associated with the Arizona Conservation System, the Wildlife Data Warehouse, and the State Wildlife Action Plan. The Coast Guard funds that the department receives are used for recreational boating safety. Amendments to the FY21 budget include replacement of nav aids, tasers, and a patrol boat canopy for Alamo Lake. FY22 includes proposals for additional taser replacements and another portion of the education building and access road design previously mentioned. The total proposed budget for FY22 Coast Guard budget is $1.9 million. The department funds for Section 6 of the Endangered Species Act are spent on wolf conservation, and the purpose of these funds is to protect and recover threatened and endangered species and their ecosystems. There are no new proposals, and expenditures are estimated to be $211,000 for FY22. The FY22 budget includes a proposal to approve the expenditures of unspent balances, which would allow the department to spend prior year remaining balances in non-appropriated and federal funds for additional qualifying projects and respond to revenue shortfalls and unforeseen needs. The proposal includes the unspent fund balances from the Heritage Fund, excluding acquisition, Arizona Wildlife Conservation Fund, Off-Highway Vehicle Recreation Fund, Wildlife and Sport Fish Restoration, State Wildlife Grants, Coast Guard Grants, Program Income, Endangered Species Act, Section 6, Capital Improvement Fund, Indirect Cost Recovery Fund, and contracts for fiscal year 2021 and any remaining capital appropriations. This slide shows the FY22 proposed budget broken down by the type of funding source. The total FY22 proposed budget is $126,772,000. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have before we proceed. If there are no questions, I have a recommendation regarding this budget presentation.
Any questions for Tom? Tom, I guess not. Proceed.
The department recommends that the commission direct the department to place this item on the consent agenda for the next regular commission meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I'd make not a motion because we're going to have it added to the consent of next meeting. I want to commend the department. The budget committee, subcommittee of the commission has worked with Tom and with Ty and the team at Game and Fish. I'm comfortable that they are on top of obviously a changing economic situation, and the advent of the continuity committee that Tom mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, I think is a very wise system. Being mirrored by many people, quite frankly, in the business world, is they have to deal with ever-changing circumstances for their companies and their businesses. So I think all the checks are in place for the department and the commission to take quick action if needed to modify budget as we go forward. At the same time, we have, you know, funding sources that will maintain themselves, and we need to be prepared to spend that money going forward because it's identified, as you know, in the budget for very specific purposes. So in short, I just want to commend the department, and I think we have a good living document with a good living process in place to have the department function month to month, quite frankly, as they deal with what we all know is the unknown. So I just wanted to add those comments.
Commissioner Kyler, did you?
Yes, I'd like to echo what our friend Commissioner Davis said. We need to have something that's a living document because of the fluid times. I'm seeing it here in my own business. And if we're not able to make adjustments and step side to side, that's my hat's off to you, Deputy Director Finley, for and your team for putting together such a good document. So thank you.
Any other comments?
Ben, we have, just to confirm, we have no public callers. Okay.
Any motions?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the recommendations as presented.
I'll second that, Guyler.
Anyone oppose? All in favor, signify aye.
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 Gary, if I have a point of clarification, Mr. Chairman. I don't believe we're approving at this point. We're just simply moving to the consent agenda for next month.
Correct.
Because there'll be updates on this, or could be significant updates on this too for next month.
Well, then we don't need to.
Correct.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Finley.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this brings us to our next items are time certain. Gene, do you have something you want to add?
Mr. Chair, Director, we did just get a hold of the rehearing, which is not time certain, and was told he agenda item 8 may be calling in here in just a few seconds.
So we can move to agenda item 8.
Yeah.
So with that, Mr. Chairman, we will, if you're okay with it, we'll move to agenda item 8, which is rehearing requests regarding previous license revocation and civil assessment. Presenter Gene Elms, Law Enforcement Branch Chief.
Thank you.
Mr. Director, Mr. Chairman, I have a question related to this. We are on item 8, and we will just be ascertaining whether we are going to choose to have a rehearing or not. We're not going to actually be rehearing all the evidence. I'm asking for Jim Odenkirk's direction.
Yeah, this is typical. The decision is whether to accept his petition for a rehearing. You have the option of denying the petition, accepting the petition, and if you accept the petition, you have the option of proceeding with the rehearing now or scheduling it for a later date.
But we have the option, Jim, to obviously also not to reject the
petition. To deny the petition, yes, you can do that.
We don't have to rehear all of the information again.
No, typically what happens is Officer Elms will present the background of the case, the individual who has submitted the petition can speak to his request for the rehearing, and then you make a decision.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Gene.
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, according to my screen, we have a caller on the line, so I assume that's Mr. Chavalera. So I will begin. On June 3rd, 2019, Jim Chavalera was convicted in the Desert Ridge Justice Court for obtaining a 2017 resident hunting license and 2017 resident deer tag by misrepresentation. On January 24, 2020, the commission revoked Mr. Chavalera's hunting, fishing, and trapping license for a period of 3 years and further required him to complete a hunter education course before obtaining any other license to take wildlife in the state of Arizona. Mr. Chavalera has requested a rehearing in this matter and would like the opportunity to speak further with the commission. Mr. Chavalera has been noticed for today's hearing by certified mail. I believe he is also available by phone. Mr. Chavalera also provided a note that you should have in your packet regarding his rehearing request. Mr. Chavalera, are you there?
Yes, sir.
If you would like to address the commission, go ahead. I'm not sure if you were on the line before, but the process in front of you is you will present your information to the commission. They may have some questions for you, and following that, they will make a recommendation whether to grant the rehearing or affirm their original position. So feel free to proceed.
Okay, I just want to thank the commission for rehearing it and listening to me. I know on that day I was kind of bunched in with a couple other people, and I just wanted to, you know, let the commission know that of my, you know, I agree 100%. You know, I'm not trying to deflect anything. I have fully acknowledged what I've done. And I'm very remorseful as far as my actions. And I do, you know, as I stated before, you know, I realize that this is a privilege, not a right to hunt. And my main thing that I wanted to say is that for, you know, being able to address you and let you know, that I do understand that what I did was wrong. I just want you to guys acknowledge that the amount of time that was given to me was also the amount of time for the other two guys that was bunched in with me, which, you know, I don't know if it makes a difference to you, but, you know, one of the guys did it for 21 years, one of the guys did it for 17 years, and mine, I believe, was like, you know, six, and I don't know if that makes a difference or not, but... that's pretty much the only thing I was trying to see, if it was, you know, justifiable to have the same amount of time as them. Is all. Like I said, I fully respect your decision, and moving forward, what you do, I just didn't want to leave this without being able to address you and let you know. That's all. I appreciate your time, and just letting you know that I did, you know, complete my hunter safety course and was able to pay all my fines. And like I said, I'm not denying anything. I'm just, you know, somebody who realizes and is remorseful. But thank you, and I appreciate your time.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, ma'am.
I move that the commission affirm the original decision in this matter of James S. Chavarella, and that the petition for the rehearing be denied.
Any other comments?
Who's the second?
Guiler.
Okay.
Favor, signify aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed, signify so. Carries 5-0.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that brings us, the only thing we have left on the public agenda is the time certain at 10 a.m. I would suggest that the commission vote to go into executive session, maybe take a 15-minute break if you want and meet in executive session at 9:30 to start on that, or your other option is just come back at 10 a.m.
Any thoughts? Anybody want to break and do it now, or do you want to wait?
Mr. Chairman, I'd recommend a five minute break and then sign in and start the executive session.
That's fine. Commissioner Geiler, there's a commission commendation of achievement for Safari Club. I would like you to take a look at that and maybe make the presentation after we return.
Okie doke. I don't have that on my screen. I don't know where that's at.
My book, if you don't have it, I'll do it. That's fine.
Yeah. Why don't you do it? Because I'm not seeing it.
So, all right. Mr. Chairman, we'll need a vote to go into executive session.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to go into executive session in 5 minutes.
Okay.
For a second?
I second it, Commissioner Brick.
All in favor, signify aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we'll come back, or for the public, we'll come back to the live session at 10 a.m. for the time certain.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Chairman, just to want to verify, we got everybody back. I see Commissioner Brake, Guggenhauer, Geiler. Is Chairman Sparks on? No Chairman Sparks. Is your phone muted?
Hover over Sparks, see if you can unmute him. Sparks.
Chairman Sparks, are you there yet? All right, I do see Commissioner or Vice Chairman Davis. Do you see Chairman Sparks' name up there anywhere?
He is there.
Oh, he's there.
He's muted.
Okay, he's muted. Okay, well, we will get going then. All commissioners are on. Item 7 is hearings on license revocations for violations of game and fish codes and civil assessments for the illegal taking and possession of wildlife. Presenter is Gene Elms, Law Enforcement Branch Chief. Gene.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, good morning. Mr. Director, thank you. The Department would like the record to show that each of the cases the Commission may consider today have been reviewed, and it has been determined that the cases meet the criteria established in Arizona Revised Statute 17238, 17245, 17314, 17340, 17362, 17363, and or 17502 for Commission action. The record should reflect that the Commission and the respondents have been provided with copies of the original court dockets and case reports prepared by the officers, along with all other copies of pertinent material in each of these cases. All of these exhibits may be considered by the Commission in order to make a final determination in each of these cases. Please note that each individual is legally noticed for today's hearing. Since we are webcast, I have a list of people, those individuals that were noticed and that are online. So instead of doing the typical roll call, I will tell you the names of those that I see in front of me. We will also take the revocation cases in the order that people have called in to the meeting. So the first on my screen is Hunter DeWitt. The second is Donald Parco. The third is Marcus Tucker. The fourth is Charles Griffin Sr. The fifth is Braden Cooper. If any others show up, we will take them in the order of their presence. The civil assessment process is not intended to be punitive, but is a process allowing the Commission to recover financial damages to compensate the state for loss of any wildlife. Hunter education requirements are imposed as a remedial measure to increase knowledge and prevent future violations and not as punishment. The Department is ready to present these cases for possible revocation or civil assessment action and have the Commission take jurisdiction.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion for the Commission to take jurisdiction.
Thank you, Commissioner. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Commission has jurisdiction. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we'll take these cases in the order of presence on the phone. The first one is docket number 2020-0020, name of Sterling Hunter DeWitt, 373 West Center Street, Pima, Arizona, 85543. conviction summary, possess or transport unlawfully taken wildlife or parts of wildlife of one black bear. The court's based in Justice Court. Plea on count A is not guilty. Count B is guilty per plea agreement. Sentenced to a fine of $200 and completion of hunter education course, which was completed in October 21st, 19. Date of conviction, August 27th, 2019. Actions to be considered, revocation of any license to take wildlife pursuant to ARS 17-340. Require completion hunter education course pursuant to ARS 17-245. Case summary, on August 9, 2018, Arizona Game and Fish received a call from a person who wished to remain anonymous, stating they believe Blake Owens may have illegally killed a black bear in Game Management 23 with a handgun during an archery-only season in 2017. Pictures were posted online during this time. Officer Terrell was conducting an ongoing investigation into Blake Owens' unlawful take of wildlife. Officer Terrell had observed the text messages and photographs from a seized cell phone concerning a black bear that Blake Owens killed on August 30, 2017, as well as extracted cell phone data from Hunter DeWitt's cell phone. The investigation yielded evidence showing that on August 30, 2017, Blake Owens and Hunter DeWitt pursued a black bear with dogs and killed it with a firearm in Game Management 23 North that was restricted to archery only. After Blake Owens killed the bear with a 44 Magnum handgun, he contacted the department's bear hotline to report that he had killed the bear in Game Management Unit 23 South, which is open to hunting with firearms. The following day, Blake Owens presented the bear for a physical inspection at the department Pine Top office. Blake Owens provided further details about the kill, again claiming he had killed it in Game Management 23 South, specifically in Malicious Gap. During the inspection, the department collected DNA from the bear. On September 24, 2018, Arizona Game and Fish officers located the actual kill site in Game Management 23 North, matching the geography and foliage, and depicted in Blake Owens' photo. Department also found the bear's carcass at the Game Management 23 North kill site, including bones. On October 2018, DNA from the bones was compared to that sample collected during the physical inspection of the bear, and the DNA from the bear hide was being held in Hunter's taxidermy shop in Blake Owens' name. The analysis was done by Wyoming Game and Fish Forensic Lab, and the three samples were determined to have come from the same bear. On March 12, 2019, Hunter DeWitt voluntarily contacted the department about the case and stated that Blake Owens had killed the bear illegally in Game Management 23 North during a time when only an archery equipment was allowed. Hunter DeWitt stated that Blake Owens had used his handgun to illegally take the bear in Game Management 23 North. Hunter DeWitt took responsibility for his actions and provided the handgun Blake Owens used to commit the crime and transported the unlawful taken black bear in his truck after the incident. Hunter DeWitt was remorseful about his involvement in the incident and for not contacting the department sooner. Corresponding cases, Blake Owens, that case you will hear next month, disposition of wildlife evidence, black bear hide is held, was seized from Hunter DeWitt taxidermy and secured in evidence. Time spent, 166 hours. Mr. DeWitt is available by phone, and the case officer, Mark Terrell, should be available by video or audio.
Can we hear from Mr. DeWitt?
Yes, sir.
Mr. DeWitt, please tell the commission anything you would like regarding this incident. Following that, they may have some questions for you, and they also may have some questions for the officer.
Absolutely. First of all, I thank the commission for giving me the opportunity to talk today. It's been a long time coming, and with all the world events, it's kind of been to get to this point, but I am grateful to be here and finally get this behind me. Again, I thank you for this opportunity, and I'd like to publicly apologize, not just to the department, but also to the Sportsmen of Arizona, the Houndsmen of Arizona, and to other officers involved, Officer Terrell, Officer Wagner, and Officer Clay, and any others that may have been involved. My love for the outdoors and especially hunting with hounds is something I have put my heart and soul into for over 20 years, and I have strived to be honest and follow the law the best I can. Unfortunately, on August 30th, 2017, my judgment lapsed. Although we had no intention that day to do anything illegal, it happened. We had a giant bear on the ground that had no intention to tree. After several attempts to get close, and on one occasion getting within 20 yards of him for an archery kill, the bear bull rushed us and went up and over a ridge, and the dogs had him bayed in the bottom of a canyon. We got within 100 yards or so. My buddy was going to try and get a shot with his bow. I had him put my 44 on his hip for as a protective matter. I stayed back and waited, and within minutes, I heard the gunshot. My mind racing at this point from everything that had just took place, I made the wrong decision to skin, pack out, and transport the bear to my friend's house. In my mind, I justified my actions by telling myself, Blake's a big boy, and he can make his own decisions. And I didn't want to turn in a lifelong friend. This was my big mistake, and I regret it deeply. My two biggest regrets in this whole thing is, one, I shouldn't have handed him my pistol, and two, is not calling the day it happened. I waited. As soon as I heard my name being brought up, I called Officer Wagner and told him everything, and what a weight that was lifted off my chest. Again, I want to say I'm sorry. I've learned from my mistakes that day. The biggest thing I've learned from going through this thing is truth, lies are lies, right is right, and wrong is wrong. And by simply telling the truth, I have lost lifelong friends. But I offer truth. So I ask for them to come in and continue to hunt. My honest hope is that the whole deal can be used to help other hunters who find themselves on the wrong side. They know that they can call the game and fish no matter what and be treated fairly. I understand there are consequences for choices, and I accept that fully. As a husband and father, I teach this truth to my family and stand by it and accept it. Again, I am sorry and regret my involvement in this case, and would hope it can be used by the department to show other hunters that being honest, although hard at times, is the right thing to do. If the commission has any questions, I'd love to answer them. And again, sorry, and I wish I could see you in person, but it is what it is, and that's all I've got.
Any questions?
Chairman Sparks.
Chairman Sparks, Commissioner Guiler, would it be possible to hear from the officer also in this instance?
Certainly.
Mr. Chair, this is Officer Terrell. Also, if you're a department officer on the phone, there's several of you by phone only. Please mute your phones until you're called to talk. Go ahead, Mark.
This is Officer Terrell, law enforcement specialist out of the Pine Top region. I'm the case officer in this investigation. Mr. Chairman, did you have a specific question, or?
When this gentleman came to you with this case, what was did they appear as remorseful then as they do today on the phone?
Yes, they did.
Okie doke. And with regard to the taking of a bear in the archery unit, is there a guide's license involved with this? Since we're a member of the Arizona Houndsmen.
Mr. DeWitt, in this case, Mr. DeWitt did not have a guide license in the state at this time, I do not believe.
Okay.
Maybe.
Oh, go on ahead.
No, I did not.
The other question that came to mind in this case is, since it was a situation where we had friends reporting friends, and having been in that situation in the past, it's not an easy decision to make, turning a friend in. And I have a little sympathy for Mr. DeWitt in that case, because that has occurred with this commissioner. But I agree with him that taking responsibility and making something right from a bad situation is always it's not the easy road, but it's the high road. So I commend Mr. DeWitt for taking that step and actually owning up and being man enough to step in front of the commission today. But I'll yield the rest of my time to my fellow commissioners.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis.
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
I just wanted to kind of echo Mr. Geiler's comments. Mr. DeWitt, I do appreciate as a commissioner your willingness to come forward. It is extraordinarily difficult, obviously, when it's friends, and so you did the right thing. I wanted to, and I'm sure you're aware of this, in normal circumstances, this is, quite frankly, an easy 5-year revocation situation. But because of your honesty and reflection on this and remorse and doing the right thing, as Commissioner Geiler said, it makes this decision also tougher on the commission. But that's a good thing because you did the right thing, and I just wanted to tell you I appreciate it, because normally when you see these kinds of cases and these kinds of circumstances, which unfortunately we see from time to time, this is normally a 5-year revocation scenario. So thank you for taking the time to show up. Thank you for doing the right thing in a difficult circumstance.
Any other commissioners have any questions?
Mr. Chairman, Jim Guggenauer here. Just clarification. It did say in the report that there was a guide was not used on this hunt. So there is not a guide. Mr. DeWitt's dogs were used to trail the bear, but not functioning as a guide.
That's correct.
Okay, good.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Go ahead, please.
I move that the license or license privileges of Sterling H. DeWitt to hunt, fish, and trap in the state of Arizona be revoked and he'd be denied another for a period of 3 years. That the current license be suspended as of the date of this hearing, and that it be revoked as of the date the order in this case is signed by the director. That he be required to complete the hunter education course and provide proof to the department before applying for another license to hunt in this state. And I further move that the director or secretary to the commission be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and an order in this matter pursuant to the motion.
I second that.
Any other comment from commissioners? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Which I am. So it carries one.
Mr. Chair, the next case is docket number 2020-0019, name of Donald Parco, 1130 Arboleta Drive, La Brea, California, 90631. Conviction summary, citation B18290, obtained resident hunting fishing license by fraud. Citation B18300, count A, apply for resident elk tag by fraud. Count B, apply for resident antelope tag by fraud. The court's the Desert Ridge Justice Court. Plea on citation 1B18290 is not guilty. Citation B18300, count A, is guilty. Count B is not guilty. The court accepted the plea agreement. Sentenced to pay a fine of $492.50 and $107 in restitution on October 28, 2019. Actions to be considered: revocation license, take wildlife pursuant to ARS 17340, require completion of hunter education course pursuant to ARS 17245. Case summary: on January 22, 2019, Arizona Game and Fish Officer Nemo L. received a request from Arizona Game and Fish Hunt and Draw section to investigate Donald Parco, who had submitted a resident hunt application while providing a California address. Officer Nimblewell conducted an investigation into Parco's residency status and learned the following. Parco has a California valid license and California address. He has an Arizona identification card with a physical address and California mailing address. Parco has one known vehicle registered in his name in California with a California address. The vehicle was purchased in June 30, 2018, during the time he affirmed residency in Arizona. There are no records of Parco having a vehicle registered in his name as Arizona. He owns property in Mojave County, Arizona. Parco acquired the property in July 2017 as a vacant land. Parco has entered into the California Department of Fish and Wildlife licensing database as a California resident with a California address and has been issued resident California application license and permits to take wildlife from April 15, 2018, April 20, 2018, April 29, 2018, and June 12, 2018. On December 18, 2018, Parco was issued an annual Arizona resident hunting license and fishing license. A Mojave Valley address was provided for Parco on his license. This license was paid for by a MasterCard. The customer provided billing information indicated the credit card belonged to Tara Parco of La Brea, California. Parco's telephone number and email address were provided and the customer provided billing information. On January 14, 2019, the department received online application requesting Parco be issued a resident Arizona antelope tag and elk bonus point. A California address was provided by Parco for these applications. The application fee for these applications were paid with the MasterCard. The customer provided billing information indicated the card belonged to Mr. Donald Parco. Cellular telephone records obtained for Parco from June 2018 to January 2019 documented Parco was physically residing in California and spent 3 days or less in Arizona during that time frame. Department of Fish and Wildlife officers contacted Parco as a resident. Parco made statements indicating he is a California resident and provided documentation of his California-based business, employment, income, tax returns, and health insurance. On May 29, 2019, Officer Nemoel spoke to Parco on the telephone, wherein Parco had affirmed his California residency but justified it, indicating he had spent 6 months in Arizona. This statement obviously was in conflict of his cellular telephone records. There's no corresponding case, no wildlife was taken, time spent 40 hours. Mr. Parco is present on the audio, and as is Officer Nemoel. Do you have any questions?
Commissioners, do you have any questions? No. Anybody want to hear from the officer?
Please. Mm-hmm.
Please.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Guggenhauer, you appeared to be saying something, but you were muted.
Sorry, could we hear from Mr. Parco, please?
Mr. Chair, would you like to hear from Mr. Parker prior to the officer? Mr. Parker?
Yes. Mr. Parker, members of the commission. Dean cut out a bit there. I think you were asking for me.
First, Mr. Parco, I believe.
Yeah. Mr. Parco, go ahead and speak.
Yes, I just want to say thank you guys for giving me the option to talk today. I really appreciate it. I am new at hunting, about 2 years now into getting into the hunting industry.
I apologize.
It is a little gone. Go ahead. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, yes. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm new at hunting. It is a little daunting on how much information just to get involved in this. I did also purchase a property in Arizona. While purchasing that property, I was under the impression that I could be a resident in both areas. So I did apply for a resident license. I also put down, you guys heard, that my California address for the billing information. So I, at that time, I was not trying to misinterpret anybody. If obviously if I was going to lie about this, I would have stuck with my Arizona address and the very and all the information. But I did put down my California. About a month after I did that, I received a call from Fish and Game questioning me about the license, about my California billing address. During that time, I explained that that is a second home, that my kids, because they asked about where my kids go to school. I explained to them my kids go to school in California. Everybody's in California. I am running a storage facility out of that property. So I do go back and forth throughout the year. They also asked me where my taxes were done. I told them it was California. And where my driver's license was done, I told them it was California. During that time, I did explain I am possibly going to be going out there 6 months out of the year, which I did not meet that because business is not as busy as I assumed. And I also do security in the security industry for cameras, fire alarm. I was supposed to receive a big job out in that area as well to stay out there, but that did not go down. So I did not meet the criteria of 6 months. But after speaking to the Inspector Numo after the Fish and Game showed up at my property on March 30th, I got the information. I called Mrs. Numo that same day just to go over to find out what was going on. When she was speaking to me, she explained that no matter what, even if I would have met the 6 month criteria, which I explained to the Fish and Game before I received my license, I still would not have qualified because I did not do my license or my taxes were not in Arizona. So I was not aware of all that you could not apply for a residence. I thought if you owned a property, you can apply for a residence. I truly apologize if this has already cost me over $1,000 in time. I also was part of FRVC, which is Fishery Resource Volunteer Corps, and OHV Volunteer. I have been removed from that program because of the misdemeanor, and I cannot volunteer anymore. I am trying to get into the wildlife, you know, want to get into hunting, but I made a big mistake, and I please do not want to lose my license for the remaining time. I do have a seven-year-old son that I'm trying to do a fishing and do the things right. We do have a property in Arizona that we'd like to use. I just made a big mistake, and I did not realize you couldn't do this. That's really where I leave it. I apologize. I wish I could be in front of you guys today, but it was definitely a mistake.
Any questions for him?
Mr.
Or do you want to hear the off?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. Mr. Parker, what units did you apply to?
I don't even know. All I did was click on their elk, and I didn't even know of a unit. I think I just clicked on elk and the big sheep because I was told those are like the best ones to go for. I don't even know of a unit I applied for at the time. I apologize. I was probably only a year into hunting and just doing California. I've also been found out now doing this more that I've been actually applying for the wrong tags in California and doing it wrong as well, where I've been applying for points, which I could have got over the counter. Again, it's very hard to find out information in hunting. People keep this very secret. The only reason I even thought about doing the resident is because I've met some people at the bow range, and they're like, oh, you have a property out there? Oh, you could be a resident. So a lot of people don't understand these rules. And after speaking with Mrs. Numo, Inspector Numo, she explained a lot of information that I was not even aware of, that now I'm happy, you know, she's guided me in the right direction, so I don't do this again. So,
Mr. Chairman, I have a question as well, if Mr. Guggenhauer is done.
Go ahead, please.
Mr. Parco, did I hear also you applied for antelope?
Let me see. I thought it was an elk, and maybe it was an. I think it was two tags, an antelope or elk. I thought it was big sheep and elk. I don't think it was an antelope.
Okay.
I don't think it was that.
And when you
I think I only applied for two bonus.
And you applied for these licenses on the draw and for your license online?
Yes, sir.
And
it was all
time,
online, is that what you asked?
Yes. Did you notice when you were applying online, on several occasions, there is a pop-up that talks about residency?
To tell you the truth, I did it late at night, and I did not read everything disclosed. I was kind of in a rush, and that's my fault. I mean,
thank you.
I'm not a very good reader, actually. I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Parker.
Mr. Chair, would you like to hear from the officer?
I would.
I would.
Go ahead, please, sir.
Commissioner Sparks, members of the commission, did you have a specific question you wanted to ask?
Mr. Chairman, I do have a question. Commissioner Gooby and I are here. Did Mr. Parco apply for bonus points, or did he just points, or did he apply for a hunt?
Members of the commission, Mr. Parco first purchased the resident license. He applied for an elk bonus point, and then he applied for a resident pronghorn tag. His first choice that he selected was a 12A, 12B archery-only pronghorn hunt.
So that's one of our premier hunt units for pronghorn? No.
Yes, sir.
Officer Alicia, this is Commissioner Guiler here. I'm kind of confused about one thing on this, and maybe you can get me squared away on this, but when we have a situation in the draw where we have a discrepancy, our draw section usually will put out a phone call or a courtesy call, for lack of better words, just to touch base and try to clarify the application. Did that not happen in this case, or did it happen?
Commissioner Guiler, members of the commission, that absolutely happened.
Okay. And what was the, according to our draw section, I mean, something happened that they brought it to your attention.
Commissioner Guiler, members of the commission, can you guys hear me okay? It's freezing a little bit on my
end.
Yes.
Can hear you.
We can hear you.
Okay. You know, that absolutely happened in this case. Mr. Parco's first opportunity was he completed three separate residency affidavits online through our system. He would have completed an affidavit for each, the hunting license, the elk bonus point, and the resident pronghorn tag. Because he used his California address, the a CSR and draw reached out and called Mr. Parco to be sure that he was wanting to apply as a resident. And I was not on that phone call, but typically what happens is they provide them with some information, and the applicant has the choice to withdraw their application at that point. Mr. Parco assured them that he had been in Arizona for 7 months, and the applications remained in the draw. So he had multiple opportunities to receive some information and correct this, and that just didn't happen.
Okay. Thank
and
you.
I think the detailed question. Yes, sir.
Ooh, go on ahead. I'm sorry I cut you off.
No, I just think Mr. Parco is misremembering. I asked him pretty detailedly about income tax returns, and I don't know that the CSR would have gone into that level of detail. I think it was a more basic conversation. My understanding, hey, we noticed you applied as a resident with a California address. We just need to be sure.
Okay.
And he assured them that he was here for 7 months and that should proceed. So that's what they did. They left his applications in the draw. They can't remove him without his consent or a criminal conviction. And they forwarded the issue to me to follow up from there.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that clarification.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
I have a question of the officer.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Commissioner Brick.
Did the defendant have was he ever successful in any of these draws? Did he ever get a tag?
Commissioner Brake, members of the commission, no, he was not successful in the draw. He did not. That was his first application. As you can imagine, that he did not draw that tag. His bonus points remain. I just noticed that. I'll need to have those removed. But no, he was not successful. We did speak in the interview. He had told me that he had an Tendona in August of 2019, I believe, to do some archery deer hunting, and wanted to know if he would be revoked before that time. And I advised him that would be unlikely and that he should just buy a new non-resident license and an archery tag. And I can check right now and see if that happened, or he can maybe let us know. So I believe he was going to come over here for the archery hunt, but he was supposed to do it as a non-resident.
And you don't know whether he did that or not?
I don't. I don't see anything keyed into Sportsman's right now as far as tags, but sometimes there's some delay in that. Unfortunately, those over-the-counters, if they don't buy them from us directly. And I'm checking the license. I don't see anything keyed into Sportsman's, but...
If Mr. Parko is still on the line...
Mr. Parko could perhaps answer that question.
Could he answer that question for me, please?
Yes, Parko. This is Mr. Parko. No, I did not continue hunting. I stopped everything until I had this resolved.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions from any of the commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion.
Please, Commissioner Davis.
I move that the license and our license privileges of Donald A. Parko Jr. to hunt, fish, and trap in the state of Arizona be revoked and he be denied another for a period of 5 years. That the current license be suspended as of the day of this hearing, that it be revoked as of the date of the order in this case is signed by the director. That he be required to complete the hunter education course and provide proof to the department before applying for another license to hunt in this state. And I further move that the director or secretary of the commission be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and an order in this matter pursuant to this motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the next case is docket number 2020-0017, name of Marcus Tucker, P.O. Box 119, Pierce, Arizona, 85625. Conviction summary charge, count A, take wildlife, javelina without a license. Count B is take javelina without a permit. Count C is take javelina by unlawful method. Count D is take wild or javelina knowingly waste edible portions. The court's the bench in the Justice Court. Plea is guilty on all counts. Court accepted the plea, sentenced to pay a fine of $1,275.60 on August 22, 2019. Actions to be considered: revocation of license, take wildlife pursuant to RS 17340, require completion of hunter education course pursuant to RS 17245, civil damages no less than $2,080.94 for the loss of one javelina pursuant to ARS 17314. Conviction case summary: on January 13, 2019, Officer Martin Grina and Kevin Crouch received an Operation Game Thief report involving a javelina that was shot and killed with a rifle during an archery-only season in Game Management Unit 33. A reporting party observed Marcus Tucker kill a javelina with his rifle. Tucker then dragged the javelina into the brush and left it in the area, left the area in his truck. The RP provided the license plate to the truck, which came back to Chet Farnsworth. Officer Grina and Crouch located the vehicle and performed a traffic stop. When the officer contacted Tucker and Farnsworth, they observed two loaded rifles uncased on the front seat of the vehicle. A bow was also observed in the back seat. Tucker admitted to shooting the javelina with the rifle and dragging it into the ditch. There's no corresponding cases. Time spent 75 hours. I believe Officer Grina is available by audio, and Mr. Tucker is available by phone.
You want to hear from the officer?
I would.
Mr. Chair,
First hear from the individual,
Mr. Tucker. Yes.
Mr. Sure. Tucker, go ahead and speak.
Okay. I'd like to thank you guys for letting me speak to you on this commission. I'm very grateful. I wish I could be there in person. I like to do things up front, but unfortunately it was just not possible. Well, to cut a long story short, I was hiking with my friend Chet. We had no intention at all of killing javelina, anything. He had a deer tag. I was simply there to observe and watch. And along the hike, I spotted a javelina, and I made a very stupid decision to shoot it. And it's something that I am really disappointed in myself for doing. I've never poached before. It's not something I've ever thought about. And I regret it immensely. And it's something that I really, really am disappointed in myself for doing. It's not something I've ever done. Like I said, we didn't intend to shoot anything. Unfortunately, I made a worse lapse in my judgment than I did, and there's no excuse for it. It happened, and I definitely learned a lot from that day, and not just from game and fish, but it's taught me to think about my actions a lot more before I do something in my everyday life, and it's something that's still in the back of my mind every day. And I would be grateful for a second chance of having my license, but I also do accept the consequences of my actions. I think that's it for me.
Any questions of Mr. Tucker?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Kurt.
Sure.
So, I want to thank Mr. Tucker for coming. It's the worst part of being a game and fish commissioner is dealing with these, quite frankly, these kinds of scenarios. But I think, too, it should be recognized that there was a series of bad decisions, not a single bad decision, but actually a series of bad decisions. And
yes,
very unfortunate, and I know we all in this life make mistakes. At the same time, again, I think we're dealing with a situation that a species was shot without a license, using a device that would not have been allowable anyhow, and then it was left. And now, these are a series of poor decisions from my circumstance, but I do appreciate you coming. And I think I speak for the commission. This is the worst part of being a commissioner, quite frankly, is dealing with these situations.
Yeah. Yes, it's definitely something that was a better lapse in my judgment. I'm still learning. I'm still trying to do things right. And I honestly wish I could take it all back, but I mean, this is how I learn a lot of times is you got to do it and face the consequences, and it is what it is, and I've just learned to accept that. And it's definitely played a bigger part in my life than just killing the javelina. It's taught me just to think before I do a lot of things for sure. And it was a series of things that I did not do right. And I was always taught to get a permit, get a tag, and I always have. And I didn't this time, and it is a very poor decision.
Anyone else have any questions of Mr. Tucker?
Mr. Anyone? Tucker, this is Commissioner Guiler. I have a question about the first time you ever took hunter safety, sir, if you can remember back that far. I'm a little older than you, so my mind's a little more foggy, but when you took that first hunter safety course, did you sit in a classroom, or was it during our online option that people have?
I believe it was an online course.
Having taught that a lot in the past, I think one of the things that would be really good for you when you have to take this recertify your hunter education, might be to sit in the class. And in particular, just my opinion is to listen close when you have somebody standing there instead of online talking about hunter ethics, because it's a very easy line to cross. We found that in this case, and I echo Commissioner Davis about how tough some of these things are. But I would urge you to make the effort to go sit in a class and listen closely, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jim Guggenheim. Mr. Tucker, I'd like to also echo what the other
commissioners are saying here, and realize that when an action like this is taken and then wildlife is left in the field just to decay, when other groups hear about this information, they try to promote your types of actions to hunters everywhere. And so it really is not just about you. It's about hunting in general and all the sportsmen that are out there. And so as you go through that hunter safety course again, please keep that in mind. You're representing a much larger community than just yourself when you're in the field.
Absolutely. Mr. Brake, do you have a recommendation?
Yes, I do, Mr. Smirk.
Proceed.
I move that the license and or license privileges of Marcus A. Tucker to hunt, fish, trap in the state of Arizona be revoked and that he be denied another one for a period of 5 years. That the current license be suspended as of the date of this hearing and that it be revoked as of the date of the order in this case as signed by the director. That he be required to complete the hunter education course and provide proof to the department before applying for any other license to hunt in this state. That the department be directed to collect civil damages or to bring civil action against Marcus A. Tucker to collect the amount of $2,080.94 for the loss of one javelina. And I further move that the director, as secretary of the commission, to the commission, be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of the law, and an order in this matter pursuant to this case. Thank you.
Any other commissioners want to join in the motion?
Second.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0. Thank you.
I have a question for you, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
So if my hunting license is revoked, do I get to keep my fishing license, or is that also revoked?
That's also revoked.
It is?
I believe it is from the motion that was made, yes.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Tucker, you will receive information in the mail in a couple in a week or so that outlines everything. Also, my phone number will be in there. So if you have any questions once you receive that packet, please give me a call.
Okay, I will.
Mr. Chairman, just
heard a motion in a second, but I didn't hear a vote.
Exactly. We need to have it actually having a vote.
All in favor? Signify.
Aye.
Myself. Carries 5-0. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the next case is docket number 2020-0018, name of Charles Griffin Sr., 48956, Ehrenberg, Arizona, 85334. Conviction summary, count A, take wildlife within a quarter mile of an occupied structure, count B, possess unlawfully taken wildlife, count C, take deer without a valid tag. The court's a courtside justice court. Plea on count A is guilty per plea agreement. Count B and C were dismissed. Court accepted the plea, sentenced to a fine of $151 on July 18, 2019. Actions to be considered: revocation of any license to take wildlife pursuant to ARS 17340. Require completion of education course pursuant to ARS 17245. Case summary: on November 9, 2018, Officer Shanley was observing hunters in a farm field near El Paso Gas Company when she saw two individuals in a UTV. Officer Shanley observed Charles McBroom shoot and drop a deer in a cotton field. Officer Shanley watched McBroom and his passenger, Charles Griffin, drive around to the field to an area close to where the deer had fell. Griffin exited the vehicle, and Officer Shanley watched Griffin fire four additional shots at the deer. Officer Shanley was aware McBroom did not have a tag. Officer Shanley drove to the location of the kill and asked about the hunt. McBroom immediately stated he got one. Griffin interrupted McBroom, stating, "Well, I shot this one from over there." and motioned across the canal to the road on the other side. Griffin then stated that he had dropped the deer, but it did not quite kill it, and he had to drive around the canal, and Griffin entered the field and finished it off. Shanley asked if they told the truth, and they stated, yeah, why? Officer Stanley stated she had observed the whole hunt and that McBroom had taken the initial shot and at the deer, and Griffin finished off the deer. Both individuals lied to Officer Shanley and never admitted to McBroom taking the first shot at the deer. On November 10, 2018, Shanley collected additional evidence that showed the deer had been taken within a quarter mile of an occupied structure. Griffin was 20.20 miles away from the El Paso Company building when he had fired the rifle. Corresponding cases, Charles McBroom, that case is still going through the court. There's no wildlife, disposition of wildlife in this case. Ty spent 5 hours. It appears Mr. Griffin is available by phone. I don't believe Officer Shanley is going to be available today.
Any questions for anyone, Jim?
Yeah, I have a question, Commissioner, Chairman Sparks.
Go ahead, Mr. Burke.
Am I correct in that we found that the department found that this residence license should have been a non-resident license? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Wright, I don't have any information regarding the license in this case.
Okay.
I think this is a case of an individual who shot the deer without a valid license or tag.
Okay, so that you answered my question. I just didn't answer the question correctly. Okay, so basically the charges that were dropped about obtaining resident tags for elk and deer are not part of this conversation.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, you may be looking at the wrong case. We're on Charles.
Oh, Griffin. You're right. I am. I beg your pardon. I have a page you got in here, the title line.
Okay.
Just for clarification, this is Chairman Sparks. It appears that from Charles R. Griffin Sr., it says possessed, taken wildlife within a quarter mile, possessed unlawful taken facility without a valid tag. So apparently he did not have a valid tag.
Mr. Griffin, would you like to address the commission?
Yes, sir, I would.
Go ahead.
When I went to court on this, I plead guilty and to shooting within a quarter of a mile of that building because I'm the only person that shot that rifle. I shot it 4 times. Your game warden got down there and said the man with the hat shot the rifle. I said, well, you're saying I shot the deer. She said, no, you're both wearing hats. Well, I was wearing a hat. Charles McBroom was wearing a baseball cap. Now, you've got game wardens out there that don't know the difference between a hat and a baseball cap. And then tell me that the man with the hat shot the deer. Sir, the only reason I plead guilty to the charge of shooting that deer within a quarter of a mile of a building was because I went out there and measured that, and that was true. I did have a valid tag. I had my deer tag, everything else. The game warden told us to go ahead and take the deer home. At the same time, somebody else had got a deer out there. The guts were about 25 yards away from where we was at, which he approached us. We said, yeah, somebody else just got the deer here. Said, they sure got it a doe out of the deer, and the guts are right there, and they are still steaming. And I know she had to watch Jim shoot the deer from the same road, because we was watching him shoot the deer. So, no, sir. The charges of me taking an unlawful deer was dismissed, and according to what my lawyer, I was informed, the prosecuting attorney that was prosecuting me had to talk to the game warden before he could drop those charges. They came back. The original was trying to get $750 fine on me and get me for all three. They came back, dropped all the charges, but shooting too close to the building. So the only thing I'm guilty of was I shot the deer too close to the building. That, I will say 100%, yes, I did do. Now, in your book that I got, reading up on your laws and all, it says shooting within a quarter of a mile of a building, but it says mostly for shotguns during dove and quail season. Now, also, I thought I was over a quarter of a mile away. I have seen people a half a mile away from that building shooting back towards a building. I was shooting away from the building. Now, I want to know where anybody buys ammunition for a high-powered rifle that bullet will automatically stop within a quarter of a mile. Common sense just tells you, you don't shoot towards a building. And that's the only thing I got to say. Yes, I did shoot within a quarter of a mile of the building.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
For Gene or the officer, this was a plea agreement situation. The charges weren't dismissed, correct? This is a plea agreement.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Davis, that is correct.
Okay. I wanted to note that for the record.
The case also does reflect that there was a witness that Officer Shanley corroborated as well in this case.
Another question, Gene, maybe, and again, this may be from the officer, just a level set for me. What was the season that was occurring at this time?
Mr. Chair, at mule deer.
It was deer season, the first day of the hunt.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Davis, I don't believe Officer Shanley is available.
Do or don't?
She has not replied, so I assume she is not.
Chief Elms, this is Todd Geiler here. I have a question regarding the Article 117-309, Section 8.4. How long has that been on the books? Because as long as I can remember, it's been illegal for us to discharge a firearm a quarter mile from an occupied dwelling. As I'm looking at the state law here, it doesn't matter whether it's a shotgun, a pistol, or a rifle. And the last time I checked, it didn't matter whether you were in a deer season, a dove season, or an archery season, you would get... if you did something in those within the realm of that portion of cited, is that still correct?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Gutter, that is correct. I can't give you a date on when that became law, but certainly prior to my career with the department.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Gene, the other party that was in the field that observed the shooting, do we have any wording on that?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Guggenhauer, I just referenced the report. There's a couple of lines referring to the witnesses that saw the incident as Officer Shanley did, but that's all the information I have.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, a question for Gene again, too, is, again, I just want to make sure I have everything in my, after reading this report twice. We have this, in this situation, we had two hunters and one tag.
Yes, sir.
Correct? Who had the tag?
Yeah.
I did. Charles Griffin.
Okay. But we have a record of a discussion about he got one.
Yeah.
Yes. He told the game warden he got one. He was talking about me. When he says he, if he was talking about himself, he would say, I got one. He says he's got one.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I might have one. Hold on a minute.
Okay, sure.
Gene, I have Courtney on the phone if the commission has questions for her.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That would be excellent.
Mr. Chair, do you have questions, or would you like her just to describe what she observed?
I'd like her to describe.
In her words, I'd like to hear her describe what she saw.
So, Courtney, can you hear that? Can you just describe what happened that day for the commission?
Yes, of course. Apologies for not being able to be there. I was sitting at a high point overlooking corn fields. There were several hunters driving around. I saw a deer standing out on the edge of a cotton field within a quarter mile of the El Paso Gas Company, and then saw side-by-side two gentlemen inside. I could tell they had seen the deer, and they started driving slowly towards it. When they got right next to the deer, one of the gentlemen got out of the side-by-side, walked to the front of it, mounted a rifle on his shoulder, and shot the deer. And the deer bounced into the cotton fields. You could tell it was wounded. But there was a canal separating them from that field, so they had to drive around and cut across the canal to come back to the area where the first gentleman had shot the deer. At this point, I saw a different gentleman get out of the side-by-side and go and shoot the deer, walk into the cotton fields, and finish that deer. So I went down there to go talk to them and thought I was just maybe addressing a quarter mile violation. And when I got there, I recognized two men as individuals I had checked earlier during that hunt, and knew that the first individual who had first shot the deer did not have a tag. And he had said he was just out helping his friend. So that's what I saw. And at that time, you know, I told them what I saw and where I had been watching them from, and they just were adamant that that's not what had happened.
Anybody else have any questions of the officer?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Is the officer, she talked to another reporting group that was in the field that day. Could she talk a few minutes about that?
My video froze. I didn't totally hear that question.
She talked to another group of hunters, and did they corroborate her story, or what did they see?
Courtney, you had a witness?
Yes, actually, I contacted
her. We cannot hear what she's saying.
Oh. Okay, hang on a second. Courtney, can you try again a little louder?
Neither can we.
They're curious if your witness corroborated your observation.
Yeah, so after speaking with the room and realizing they weren't going to.
Alicia? Can you have Courtney call us on the same phone number you did?
Okay, yeah, I'm on the Google Meet. Courtney, if I give you a phone number, can you call into the commission meeting? They're having trouble hearing you.
Okay.
Yeah, let me, hang on, let me get to that number. Jean, I'll get her the number and have her call.
602-6... I'll text it to you.
Okay, Jean, she's going to call in that number, but she was stating that the witness did corroborate her observations, but she'll call in right now that number you texted me.
Alicia, can you say the last two digits of her phone number so Ben will know which one is her?
Yeah, her last two digits are 02.
Does she have the password?
Jean did not text me a password.
Is it necessary to have one? Jean?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Brake, I don't believe so. Okay. That's the number. Ben provided me a number and no password.
Hey. Well, Commissioners, may I say one thing?
I'd like to ask.
Sorry?
Yes, go ahead. What would you like to say?
Okay. I moved out of Arizona last September, moved into California. I've been living here for 30-something years. And because of her lying down there, you know, you can tell me whatever you want to, but as far as I'm concerned, she flat lied, and that's all there is to it. If those other two charges against me had not been dropped, I would never have agreed to that plea agreement. The only reason I agreed to a plea agreement as the other two charges were dropped. Now, they told me they had to talk to her to make sure it was okay. Now, I don't care if I lose my license and all that. That has no bearing on me because at my age now, I don't plan on hunting and fishing anymore either. That was my last hunt, and I haven't been hunting or fishing since then. So you may keep my license if you want to just end that short.
Mr. Chair, Officer Shanley is available now by phone.
Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Davis. I'm going to ask Mr. Griffin a question, and I have. Is that okay?
Yes, please go ahead,
Mr. Griffin. Very rarely. In fact, I can count on less than one hand. Do we have someone who levels pretty serious charges against one of our officers? And it appears you feel very strongly about that. But if you felt so strongly about that, you ultimately pled guilty in this case. And I guess I want to know.
I pled guilty to that one charge, not the other two.
Well, that's actually
the other two charges were dropped.
Well, they were part of a plea agreement. That's different than being
dropped.
No,
they were not, sir. They were dropped before I would agree to my plea agreement. And the court made sure of that.
Let me find the document.
Yeah. I will be happy to go back to Forsyth Court and get the judge to sign a note for that, because I've already talked to the court about that. And I've got my papers saying that they were dropped.
You initialed number 15 that says, I've read the entire plea agreement.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. My attorney went over it with me.
Okay. Well, that, it's, there's a far
and the other, and the two charges were dropped. The only thing I was charged with was shooting too close to the building.
That's what you pled to, yes. As part of a plea agreement.
That's the only thing I would plead to.
As a part of a plea agreement. I just want to make that clear for the record.
Correct.
Yes. That's the only thing that I pleaded to, because I did do that. Now, if you want to check my record, my driving record, or my own personal record, you can check anything you want to about me. If I do something, I admit to it. If I don't do something, I'm not going to admit to it.
Well, I would hope not.
Courtney,
Mr. Chairman, can we talk to the officer, please?
Yeah. Officer Shanley, the question to you before we had you hang up and call into this line was describing your interactions with the witnesses to the event.
I never met the woman until that morning. And I met her that morning, and I told her the reason I was shooting a .223 was because my doctor, I got two false shoulders. They told me not to shoot a real high-powered rifle. A .223 has no kick to it. You don't even know you're shooting it. That's why I was shooting a .223.
Mr. Griffin, thank you.
With all due respect, we want to hear from the officer.
Yeah, the question was to the officer, sir.
Mr. Griffin, let's go.
Okay,
you're
fine.
Hello. Yes, and that is true. He did explain to me that he had two bad shoulders, and even showed me pictures of his artificial shoulder joints on his phone. But anyway, interacting with Mr. McBroom before I left them and found a witness, Mr. McBroom was also asked that he never left the side-by-side. Until about 5 minutes after me, interviewing them. And then he said, oh, well, I may have. I might have gotten out. And so this wasn't Mr. Griffin, but it was the gentleman he was with was also very dishonest during the time I was interviewing them both. So it was getting dark, and a lot of the hunters were leaving the field, so I left them to go talk to some groups of hunters that were hunting nearby. And the first group I went to, I spoke to a hunter. I said, do you see anyone, in a green side-by-side shoot a deer just over there? And he said, yes. And I was like, could you please describe to me who you saw shoot the deer? And he described Mr. McBroom in what he was wearing, which was very different from what Mr. Griffin was wearing. And he did write up a statement for me and email it to me about what he saw. And it was pretty much as simple as that. He just identified Mr. McBroom as the shooter. And he said he didn't pay attention after that, so he never saw Mr. Griffin finished the deer, but he did, in fact, watch Mr. McBroom shoot the deer originally.
Chairman Sparks, I'd like to recommend a motion for license revocation.
Go ahead, Commissioner, please.
I move that the license and or license privileges of Charles R. Griffin Sr. to hunt, fish, and trap in the state of Arizona be revoked, and he be denied another for a period of 5 years, that the current license be suspended as of the date of this hearing, and that it be revoked as of the date of the order in this case as signed by the director. that he be required to complete a hunter education course and provide proof to the department before applying for any other license in this state. And I further move that the director, as secretary of the commission, be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, a conclusion of law, and an order in this matter pursuant to this motion.
Is there a second? All in favor, let me know if they're all in favor. Everybody in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the next case is docket number 2020-0007, name of Braden Cooper, 4243 Strong Creek Lane, Provo, Utah, 84604. Conviction summary, count A, take bighorn sheep without a valid tag. Count B, possess unlawfully taken bighorn sheep. The Courtside Justice Court, plea on count A is guilty. Count B is dismissed per plea agreement. Court findings were the same. Sentenced to pay a fine of $50 on August 20th, 2019. Actions to be considered. Revocation of license to take wildlife pursuant to ARS 17340. Require completion hunter education course pursuant to ARS 17245. Civil damages of no less than $8,000 for the loss of one bighorn sheep pursuant to ARS 17314. Case summary, on May 25, 2017, Officer Numawell was investigating a list of persons who may have resident licenses and permits to take wildlife in both Arizona and Utah and may be in violation in one or both states. When she encountered the name for Braden Cooper, Investigator Numoyle noted Cooper had primarily obtained non-resident licenses to take wildlife in Arizona from 2004 to 2016, with the exception of Arizona resident lifetime, with the exception of an Arizona lifetime license obtained in July 27, 2015, wherein Cooper affirmed 1 year of Arizona residency prior to the date of three applications submitted between approximately June 2015 and October 2015. Investigator Numawell began an investigation into Cooper's residency status, discovered he was a lifelong resident of Utah who unlawfully obtained an Arizona resident license, a resident lifetime hunting license, obtained a 2016 non-resident bighorn sheep tag, without a valid license and unlawfully take and possess a bighorn sheep in Game Management 44B South on December 6, 2016. The corresponding cases, it was in the Kingman Justice Court. He was found guilty on February 6, 2019 for obtaining a lifetime license by fraud, paid a $500 fine. He was found guilty, entered a plea agreement in August 7, 2019 of obtained a bighorn sheep by without a valid tag and sentenced to pay a fine of $500. And he was also before this commission in December of 2019 where he received a 5-year revocation for the unlawful for the violations related to his unlawfully obtained license. The disposition of the wildlife in this case, the heads retained in evidence, time spent 234 hours. Mr. Cooper is available by phone, and Officer Nemowell is available by video. Would you like to hear from Mr. Cooper?
Let's give Mr. Cooper an opportunity to speak.
Mr. Cooper, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, I'm thankful to have this time to be able to speak with you. I want to just make sure, I believe I was getting cut out a little bit on some of that, so I didn't hear everything that was reported on some of the corresponding cases, but I did hear that, I would like to first start off saying that where it says here August of last year, I finished up all my court proceedings and my plea agreements and appeared before you in December, and that is where I did receive a 5-year suspension regarding this. At the time, I wasn't sure, and I was a little confused, and maybe you can help me out on this, is why I, why all this wasn't, you know, handled in one one instance or one case versus, you know, me having to appear again. But, you know, during that appearance is, you know, is where I acknowledged my mistakes and was, you know, given that, that suspension. So my understanding is this is to discuss a civil penalty for the recovering of, you know, or for recovery of the value of the sheep. And I, you know, to just go along, I've taken care of, you know, everything that I know of possible that has come regarding this that has come my way through the court systems. And I would only ask that, you know, I would ask the question of what is the current status, where this is, you know, where this is to recover value of the sheep, what is the current status of the sheep head? And I would also like to make a note. I don't hear in the paperwork that I received that said that the head, disposition of wildlife evidence, it said the head is retained for assets, but the meat not recovered as of this date. I have a receipt that back in October, in fact, October 8th, that it was a Sergeant Briggs of the Utah Division of Wildlife that I turned over meat and cape to that sergeant of the Utah Division of Wildlife. And I would just like to make note of that, that the paperwork that I received is incorrect when it comes to that. But outside of that, I am here to ask for, you know, I mean, some crazy times right now. I don't know what the civil sanction or the civil penalty looks like. I know it says not less than $8,000. I would ask for your leniency. Because of all of this, I am currently unemployed and don't know what the payment of that looks like or what that ends up being, but I'm here to accept it, and yeah, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have for me.
Davis, you have any comments?
Before I think we get into questions for Mr. Cooper and with the officer, it might be good to have Jim Odenkirk and Gene, especially for Commissioner Guiler, who I don't think was there when we did the, in fact, I know wasn't there when we did initial revocation, but I think level setting what we did in the first action of this and why we have a second situation, if you could level set that, Gene and Jim, that might be helpful for sure. All the commissioners.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Davis, Mr. Commissioner Guiler, the action the commission considered in December was specific to Mr. Cooper's purchase of a fraudulently obtained license. The commission took an action to revoke Mr. Cooper at that time for 5 years. The reason we didn't discuss a bighorn sheep, which is obviously related to that case, was that it had not been adjudicated. The violation of taking the sheep occurred in a different jurisdiction than the obtained license. As a result, we had a finding from the court or a plea agreement after the initial plea agreement related to the license. That's why we had to treat the cases separately. As a matter of practice, Mr. Griffin, as a condition of the commission, Mr. Griffin is currently, since that meeting, is serving a 5-year suspension. Because it's an active suspension, the commission still has a 5-year suspension available to them in this case. So as an example, if the commission would impose an additional 5-year suspension related to the taking of the sheep, it would start as of today. So essentially the 5 years would begin again as of the date of this hearing, if that's what the commission chooses to do. Mr. Chair, Commissioner Davis, did that get to your question?
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that the commission understood that it's not potentially additional years. It basically could restart the clock. And quite frankly, if you do less than five, it basically is just a concurrent time period.
the second piece was is that I do believe at the time of this initial revocation, the commission was informed that we were dealing with the disposition actually of the sheep, of the animal, and that that would come later because of the situation it was in its legal proceedings. So it wasn't the commission or the department doing the wrong thing. It was the department following normal procedures related to this case. So I just want to have all that level set as you entertain discussions with Mr. Cooper and the officer.
One additional thing for you, Chief Elms, if I might, Chairman Sparks. Do we have an outstanding court proceeding going on with Fredonia Justice Court with the fraudulently obtained 13B deer tag?
Members of the commission, we do not have an outstanding case up there. I didn't charge Mr. Cooper for that that hunt. It was the evidence in the case supported that Mr. Cooper participated in the hunt with a guide. However, no deer was taken. So I did not issue a citation for the unlawful take of wildlife in that case. Despite that would have been an appropriate charge, I stuck to the core issues of the lifetime license, the two tags that were obtained, and the take of the bighorn sheep in this case.
Okay. I only asked that, Officer Lemuel, because in this particular case, being the one commissioner that is a rabid and unapologetic hunter, we're looking at two of the most sought-after tags in the Southwest and for the West, in my opinion. So that's why I bring that up for question.
Yes, sir, and that's part of what made this case so egregious with the lifetime license and the trophy hunts that were sought and the animal that was taken.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Do I have one more question? Mr. Chairman, there's one more question.
Please, Mr. Davis.
I just want to, from my recollection, or reconfirm, at the time, was Mr. Cooper a guide?
Commissioner Davis.
Guides?
Commissioner Davis, members of the commission, at the time this incident occurred, Mr. Cooper was employed with Worldwide Trophy Adventures, who's the company. They offer, they broker guided hunts all over the world, and they also purchase the tags program from Cabela's. They have a media component where they do hunting shows. Mr. Cooper was specifically employed with Worldwide Trophy Adventures in their tag application section out of St. George, Utah. So he was responsible for purchasing licenses and submitting applications for clients of that company, and which increased his liability. Just to confirm what Mr. Cooper said, when these documents were submitted at the time of the court, they were generated at that time, so sometimes things change after that. Mr. Cooper did surrender. Ultimately, they refused during the search warrant in Utah, but once the case adjudicated, he did surrender the meat and hide to the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources. That meat was donated to a charity in Utah, and the hide is on its way returning to Arizona currently.
Officer Nemloel, when you went up and served that search warrant, as I'm reading the paperwork here, people were not honest with you at the beginning with the search warrant, were they?
No, sir. That's an understatement. There was serious integrity issues. Mr. Cooper initially told us that the sheep was in his office when his secretary notified him of the existence of the search warrant. He had her hide the head in her car, and she removed it from the office and then proceeded to lie to us about that. It wasn't until the next day when I had to write an additional search warrant for Mr. Cooper's cell phone records to document the communication between him and his secretary, and then go to the owner of that business. We did recover the sheep head. We requested, Mr. Cooper hired an attorney. We requested from the attorney the meat and hide at that point, advising him it was unlawful to possess wherever it was. And we were told that they would give it to us when we could prove why we needed it. And ultimately, it wasn't returned to us until the adjudication of the case.
You weren't given the hide and head when requested with the search warrant. You had to prove why you wanted it for the state of Arizona. Is that correct?
The defense attorney at the time declined to provide it to us at the time of the search warrant. It wasn't surrendered until after the adjudication of this case. We made a second request from his second defense attorney, and it was ultimately turned over after the adjudication of this case.
Interesting. The head, is it is it just a European, head at this point, or is it actually mounted?
It's the head is, Mr. Cooper cleaned it. He did a very nice job of having it. It appears to have been professionally cleaned. It's in a very nice condition and in evidence still, pending when we receive the hide back and what condition that's in, and what decisions Officer Elms makes for taking care of that, if it's going to go to an asset or for education. We haven't made that decision yet.
Okay. Chief Elms, I know we've discussed this in the past, but given the severity of a bighorn sheep being taken illegally, instead of $8,000, I would feel $16,000 would be appropriate in this case. But with everything that we've been given, Chairman Sparks, I have a recommended motion for license revocation and civil assessment. If the rest of the commissioners would be open to it.
Go ahead and proceed.
I move that the license and license privileges of Braden Cooper to hunt, fish, and trap in the state of Arizona be revoked, and he be denied another for a period of 5 years. That the current license be suspended as of the date of this hearing, and that it be revoked as of the date of the order in this case assigned by the director. That he be required to complete the hunter education course and provide proof to the department before applying for any other license to hunt in this state. That the department be directed to collect civil damages and to bring civil action against Braden Cooper to collect the amount of $8,000 for the loss of one bighorn sheep. I further move that the director and secretary of the commission be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and an order in this matter pursuant to this motion.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the next case is docket number 2020-0013, name of Jeremy Christian Elgin, 1200 Bryan Avenue, B, Tustin, California, 92780. Conviction summary, charge count A, five counts, obtain resident hunting license by fraud. Count B, obtain resident elk tag by fraud. Count C, obtain deer tag by fraud. The court's the Desert Ridge Justice Court. Count A, three counts of were guilty and two counts were dismissed. Counts B and C were also dismissed. Court accepted the plea agreement, fine of $600 and restitution of $1,395 on August 28, 2019. Actions to be considered: revocation of license, take wildlife pursuant to ARS 17340, require completion hunter education course pursuant to ARS 17245. According to my screen, Mr. Elgin is not online. Would you like me to read the case summary?
No.
Second.
any recommendations from the commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Please proceed.
Mr.
Chairman, I move that the license and or license privileges of Gerald C. Elgin to hunt, fish, or trap in the state of Arizona be revoked and that he be denied another one for a period of 5 years, that the current license be suspended as of the date of this hearing, and that it be revoked as of the date of the order in this case as signed by the director. That it be required to complete the hunter education, that he be required to complete the hunter education course and provide proof to the department before applying for any other license to hunt in this. And I further move that the director, as secretary to the commission, be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and an order in this matter pursuant to this motion. Thank you, sir.
All in favor?
I need a second.
I'll second.
Second. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0. Thank you, Commissioner Brick.
Mr. Chair, next case is docket number 2020-001 form in the name of Arturo Carbajal, 828 West 18th Street, Tucson, Arizona, 85745. Conviction summary charges, count A, knowingly shoot from a road, count B, failure to tag immediately, count C, possess transport wildlife without a valid tag attached, count D, possess unlawfully taken white-tailed deer. The court's Tucson Animal Welfare Court plea on all counts are guilty. Court accepted the plea agreement, paid a fine of $2,728 on April 24, 2018. Case must have been appealed. The court was Arizona Superior Court. The court affirmed the trial court's decisions on August 27, 2019. Actions to be considered: revocation of license to take wildlife pursuant to ARS 17340, require completion of hunter education course pursuant to ARS 17245, civil damages of no less than $2,774.97 for the loss of one white-tailed deer pursuant to ARS 17314. Mr. Carbajal is not present. Would you like me to read the case summary?
No.
No. I don't believe we need it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Please, proceed.
Move that the license and or license privileges of the Arturo Carbajal to hunt, fish, and trap in the state of Arizona be revoked, and he be denied another for a period of 5 years, that the current license be suspended as of the date of this hearing, and that it be revoked as of the date the order in this case is signed by the director. That he be required to complete the hunter education course and provide proof to the department before applying for any other license to hunt in this state. That the department be directed to collect civil damages or bring civil action against Arturo Carbajal to collect the amount of $2,774.97 for the loss of one white-tailed deer. And I further move that the director, as secretary to the commission, be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and an order in this matter pursuant to the motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor of the... All in favor, please...
Aye.
Stick. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone?
Aye.
Carries 5-0. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, that concludes my agenda for today. Thank you.
Thank you, Gene. Mr. Chairman, that was the last of our public session items. The only thing remaining on our agenda is executive session.
Do you want to go to executive session now, or do we want to take a break first?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to go into executive session after a 5-minute break.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, and since that is our last public session item with your, with the commission's concurrence, we will end the webcast because I think the only thing we will have to come back for is adjournment, and I've been instructed by general counsel that would be acceptable if you're okay with that.
I'm fine with it, sure.
Okay.
So let's come back in 5 minutes, I guess.
Mr. Chairman.
We'll see you on the other side.
Ty, is the call in the number that the call to the executive session the same 3-1?
It's the same one you called before, Bill.
Okay.
The same one you called earlier.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Thank you. I'll see everybody in about 5 minutes.